This is the Hugo Award-winning SF Signal Podcast. I'm your host. My name is Patrick Hester, and today I am taking you back in time to Mile High Con 46 and the second part of my Doctor Who fan forum panel. This was a great discussion that I had with four panelists, and then also there was a ton of people just who were wonderful and in part of the audience and you know, participating in the whole conversation. We only had the room for an hour, but no one came and told us to get out. So we ended up staying for another hour and just basically talking about Doctor Who. And there's lots of good stuff here. So I wanted to share it all with you. So without further ado, let's head back in time, Mile High Con 46 and part two of the Doctor Who fan forum.
Signal.
Did you like Torchwood?
Yes.
Oh, I do.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Some people have problems with Torchwood.
You don't tell them the Torchwood for happy endings. That's
true. That's
fine.
Yeah.
I
know.
That's comfortable.
I think I hate about Torchwood. Is it broke one of the cardinal rules that I have in science fiction. You can change anything, but people have to behave in a manner that's normal. And the British government wouldn't have acted like that in the children or whatever that five-episode thing was. It's just, there's no British prime minister that ever simply quietly shut up by an American general tells them what to do with the British government. And the second I watched that, yes, I know you got fears, BBC, but reality. The second I watched that, I can't believe anything else in that show because I know it doesn't work like that.
I think that was more social commentary on how, at the time, America was perceived as being this bully, going out there and telling people what to
but
do.
But when you let your social commentary get in the way of your actual story, all of a sudden, because I know that couldn't happen, the rest of the story goes away. I'll believe boys can fly on broomsticks. I'll believe aliens will land and want to suck our hearts and turn them into pinatas. Whatever. I'll buy it. But people are about to act like people. That's what makes science fiction interesting.
Yes.
How do human beings act in this incredible thing? And you start having them act in ways that you know. And for me, that is the fundamental error, that you cannot do that. If you catch it, I have test readers who say your opinion showing here, and it really wouldn't work like that. I'm a mom, and I listen to those opinions more than any others. Because nothing can rip somebody out of a story faster. And that's why after that went from, I love it, and after that it's just... Yeah. You ripped out that one thing, and after that, your whole universe is now suspect.
Yeah.
And I'm upset with them for doing that. It was acceptable. I didn't mind everything else that they were doing. And Doctor does surprisingly little of that.
Well, it's a different team and everything. I mean, it's
a different
story. They fully intended to tell different kinds of stories that you can't really necessarily tell with Doctor Who. Because Doctor Who can be lighter. And
yeah,
I don't think
it's
meant to be heavy.
It's the dark stepchild they keep in the attic of Dr.
Right, you
I got, and it was cool for that.
I always equated to Angel spinning off from Buffy. Angel was darker.
But he is so good.
Yeah, Doctor Who could not do Children of the Earth.
No.
That story would not go over right.
Yeah, there's no way. It just doesn't fit him. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's part of the thing why Doctor Who is so popular is there is that sense of almost innocent wonder. You know, even when he's dealing with super dark, scary monsters and stuff, you know,
like
I mean.
A star that wants to suck your soul out?
Yeah. But there is still that underlying, you know, sense of wonder, not that sense of jadedness. And I think. You didn't get that so much in Torchwood.
But here's the thing.
The world was coming to an end, and everything was going wrong, and everything was exploding. Who do you want to show up? Superman? The X-Men? Sherlock Holmes? Or Doctor Who? Now, by the way, we're talking to people familiar
above.
With all of them. All of the above would be great, but pretty much, if we really had to choose, the Doctor showing up in the TARDIS is the one we'd want to see more than any other. Because somehow...
But here's the problem. Superman... will do everything he can to save the planet. The Doctor, if he lands and realizes that this is what's supposed to happen as part of time, he won't interfere.
But he might save you.
He might save you. That's
okay.
It. Put your fingers in your ears for a second. When you talk about the sense of wonder, I think that what Moffat, I think he's trying to, number one, Erase everything that Russell Davies did.
Yes.
And number two, I think by going going this season, he is taking a lot of that sense of wonder away.
Well, he even said that in that last, I think it was the last episode, specifically when Claire was being the doctor, and she said, well, what would you have them do right now? And he's, you know, obviously micing her ear. He says, well, tell them they're going to make it. And she goes, but they're not. He goes, you know, and what processes through that hole? People who think they're going to make it are probably going to run faster, survive better. And all of a sudden, it really takes this idea of the last several doctors, you know, all these hopeful statements the doctor's been saying all this time, you're going to make it, we've got a plan, I'm going to survive. All of a sudden, you realize, wow, for maybe 6 years here, he's been lying to us the whole time.
Right.
We just got to pull back from the curtain. Right. The doctor lies, and he may have been lying the whole time, and it just happened to work out. He may, he is stripping away the wonder very
fast.
Okay,
there you go. You're fine. Okay. But like you said,
that was cool.
But like you said, his modus operandi is, you know, show up, talk fast, hope something good happens, and take credit for it.
So. one of my absolute favorite lines from all of Doctor Who is the Tom Baker line. He explains something to a human scientist, and the scientist, he says, I think I understand. And the doctor says, I doubt it, but it's kind of you to try.
Here's another one. Favorite sonic screwdriver scene? I'm going to cheat. I'm going to be lazy because...
What's her name from The Avengers? Polly? Blonde woman.
From AFAB.
Yeah. What is her name?
The other part of AFAB.
Yeah, but when she picks up the sonic screwdriver, turns it on, and goes, oh, this has 3 speeds.
My favorite.
You know, it's so
my favorite is the Eccleston.
What's so embarrassing is I just got that right now. If I had 47, I'd be a little bit less naive.
I love the one with Captain Jack and Christopher Eccleston in the hallway. You know, early in that season. And it's, you know, he's got his sonic blaster and it does
right.
This, that, and the other thing. And what's yours do? It's sonic. And
totally sonic.
It's totally sonic. I'm sonic'd up. I like that one because the contrast between the tool versus the weapon. And then I think I also like, my sec right up there would be from the Day of the Doctor from the 50th anniversary special.
Yeah.
Why are you guys pointing? What are you going to do? Build cabinets at it?
Or slightly that was before that where he takes his out and he goes, and then the other guy...
Compensating for something?
You're reversing it. I'm reversing it, yeah.
My favorite does come from that. Episode, but it's where they geniusly figure out if we started programming with your son, and then we get going through your, and they come up with the beautiful, brilliant, of course, we can now dissolve the door, and they brilliantly come up with the perfect Whovian solution, and the door's open. I thought that was, that's ready. Didn't any of you think to open the door?
That is something that I always loved about Moffat, is that he loves building up these huge, elaborate things, and then he immediately cuts them under, you know, cuts the feet out from underneath them.
Oh yeah, with the new doctor, the Christmas special, where he takes out the watch, and he's like, aha, this is going to swing.
Yeah, some good stuff.
I'm tempted almost, though, to say, was it the Terelleptals where it was destroyed in the Fifth Doctor's era? Because it's become such of a catch-all device now. It does so many things. It's like the tricorder. You can do anything almost. It's
well,
become a magic wand. And so part of me now is...
He has
his kit. I love the sonic strike screwdriver, but I liked it better in its older incarnation.
Well, now they use it, and you'll see Clara or somebody like using it and then looking at it. Like she's trying to read something on there. Like it's giving her readouts. And
it tells the settings. You know,
it's,
setting
it's,
58
it's,
or whatever.
It's a MacGuffin now.
Have you ever seen the Troughton where they introduce it? It's hilarious. He takes out this little pen light that's about like this, and he goes, no, look, this is a sonic screwdriver, you know, and puts it on a screw
and
undoes it and puts it back, you know. And it's like a 29-cent store, huh?
Okay. Well, you said MacGuffin. I mean, I won't get too far into it. You might have to unlimit it. But in this very latest episode, you know, of The Boneless, I mean, he literally manages to make it something that can warp multiple dimensions of space-time. I mean, it is such a... I mean, Claire's doing her thing, everything's working fine, and out of nowhere, the sonic screwdriver all of a sudden has an ability it's never had before.
There's an app for that.
It's that's exactly what I felt like. It's like, oh, I've got it. Well, he was
well,
downloading
a
really
fast.
Well,
line in the faceless, or the empty child. It's, you know, it's app 47 for putting barbed wire together.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's brilliant. Now you can say that you can just go into the TARDIS, download what you need into your device, and, you know, do anything you want.
We're good.
So, yeah. And that was a great scene, you know.
Oh, it was.
Where have I seen that actor before? The guy who was playing the idiot, mean-spirited...
Oh, he's been in everything. He's been
on...
Oh, he was so
he's
awful.
Just I think he's just a British character actor. He's been on
the guy
BBC,
looks
like crazy.
Yeah, the guy looks like a meth addict or something. Just nasty.
Whenever there's a casting call for Grumpy Old Man, he's one of the ones that show up.
So, anyway,
did everybody see the BBC special about Hartnell?
Yes.
No.
Do you mean An Adventure in Space and Time?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
The one that showed how and who was all involved.
It
yeah.
made me cry.
And it was the caretaker from Harry Potter playing Hartnell.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was brilliant.
Also,
I just
dinosaurs
thought brilliant.
Space.
Ooh.
So.
Yeah,
ooh,
and he was also
good one
Grace
for
Point.
Yes.
I'm not Broadchurch.
Broadchurch. Yeah. But I love that scene where she walks into the art department and sits down and goes, I'm not leaving until I get a time machine designed from you. And he just kind of goes over and goes, punch, 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 punch. Click.
As much as it was a story of Hartnell's doctor, it was also the story of Verity.
Yeah.
And
yes.
getting the show not only on the air, but keeping it on the air. And in an era when women weren't TV producers. And it was just a brilliant movie. I thought it was fantastic.
The scene where they introduce the Daleks, I thought was dead on. I mean, they don't actually show it to you right away. You know, they show the guy inside the thing, clunking it in. You show people's reactions to it as he's, you know, trundling by everybody going to the studio. And, you know, as much as we hate to admit it, if it hadn't been for the Daleks, probably there would be no Doctor Who today.
Yeah.
It changed everything. Yeah.
Yeah, well, the empty child, not the empty child.
Use your words. There you go.
What was the name of the first episode? The Unearthly Child?
An Unearthly Child.
That was good, but then the adventure that follows is so boring. You can watch it once. I've tried to watch it again, and you can't finish
the caveman
it.
Even they hated that.
You got to remember, the original concept was that he was going to travel through time and teach children about history.
And one of the things that she was told again and again,
no bug-eyed monsters.
Yeah.
And what happens?
And no robots.
And the only actor who's been able to get away with that in a TV show?
Yeah.
Edward James Olmos. He had it in his contract for Battlestar Galactica.
No bug-eyed monsters?
No monsters, no alien creatures, no creature of the week, no green-skinned girls. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, he literally put it in...
He had it put into his contract. So they couldn't do that kind of stuff.
Well, it worked out.
You brought up something
except
about Daleks. When Matt Smith first met the Daleks, they rebooted them and made them the classic blue-red Daleks. And then we haven't seen them since.
Yeah. Oh, you mean the Teletubby Daleks?
The original, and then from that point on,
those weren't the original. They were not modeled on the original.
They were kind of modeled. That's what he was going. He was going for a throwback.
There were colors. Some of the originals had colors, but the remodel that they did in Victory of the Daleks, where they made them much larger. I mean, their concept was, we'll make them so that the eye stalk is the same as Matt Smith's eye. When Matt Smith is standing, he will be looking directly into the eye stalk of the Dalek. So they made them larger. I don't know why they made the hump on the back.
They did the color schemes. They tried to make them look retro, like the Daleks from the 60s.
In the production stuff on them, they were actually supposed to be Swiss Army knives now. Their arms were actually supposed to be interchangeable. They never used that.
Yeah.
But there's some stuff on that. That's what the hump was, that word hump. If you look at the action figure for them, you can actually see how they would work. Because the back looks like it opens up like a door. And I guess the new arm would pop out, go into the track, the old arm would then go around. They never, they're in the production designs for the Daleks, and that's how they work now. But they never used that at all. So there was actually a reason for the hump that never made it into the show.
My thing, though, is it was such a big deal. They made such a big deal about this that they were going to have these different style Daleks.
New paradigm Daleks.
Right. And then every one that we've seen since has been the Davies era.
They slowly faded them out because they were there in the
Silence. They didn't slowly fade them out. They just got rid of them.
Silence of the Daleks.
I will tell you why.
They're
there.
Yeah.
I don't remember seeing
them. The episode from the Eccleston era where they find the one Dalek that repairs itself. And
Dalek.
Right. I was standing up and cheering that episode halfway through because they were in such danger of becoming comic relief. And suddenly you had this one basically kicking ass through Area 51, essentially. And I'm going like, yeah, they're bad.
And they solved the staircase issue.
Well, that was the best part of that episode for me was Mickey and Rose on the stairs and Mickey going, ha!
No, it wasn't Mickey.
Or Rose, yeah, or somebody going, it was the guy. Yeah, the guy going, ha! You know, what are you going to do about the stairs?
The female MVA.
And then he goes, yeah, and starts floating up. That was awesome.
You think they'll get Eccleston back? And
He did say that he would come back. He said, what was it, the...
One of the specific directors he worked with that he really liked, I think.
No, he said that he wasn't coming back for the 50th anniversary, but he will come back for the 150th anniversary if he's still alive.
Okay, I have a story about that, because for the big anniversary, I went back to England, and I was there for a two-week period right over all the events. And I went to the big Doctor Who exhibition that they had. I forget what they called it, but their huge convention that they had with Stephen Moffat and all the actors and everything. And Stephen Moffat and Matt Smith and I think David Tennant was there. We're all on stage answering questions like you do. And there was a couple questions about David Eccleston's participation or non-participation. And Moffat was somewhat tactful. But it was a question to Matt Smith. Would Matt Smith come back in the future if asked for future episodes? And Moffat looked at Matt Smith and said, if you are ever asked to come back, you will say yes. And you could just tell there was subtext in there about, you could tell there was subtext about that, that he was frustrated that he didn't get Eccleston back.
And Eccleston was very, very clear on it.
Yeah.
You know, he said, I've been there, I've done that. And he's actually come out now and said that it wasn't a great experience for him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Overall.
Yeah.
And it was either the 100th or the 150th episode. You know, he's being cheeky.
I will
come back for that.
I thought he specifically said if they got the director he enjoyed working with.
I didn't see that.
I remember something about that. There was one of the directors he worked with that he actually liked. And he said, if you get this person to direct it, I will come back.
He was a great doctor.
He was a great doctor.
If I understand it right, though,
especially
had Eccleston come back, we would never have had Hurt.
Probably.
Yes.
Which, in my mind, thank God Eccleston never came back. John Hurt was just that fabulous.
I think at this point, he's kind of like Sarah Michelle Gellar. He said, I've been there, I've done that, I'm not doing it again.
Yeah.
I'm out.
But Matt Smith said he'd come back.
Well, it was the same thing with Tom Baker. Once he was out, he didn't want to have anything to do with it. But
until an Australian...
You remember the photographs of the wax dummy, you know, going...
Yeah.
You know,
Australian company came to him and wanted him to do commercials.
Hmm.
And then he did Doctor Who commercials for an Australian company.
PC.
Yeah, my understanding is Tom Baker left when there was some pretty big issues going on.
Basically, he was kind of upset. Era where you couldn't get as much money out of the production company compared to what they're doing today. So he was basically seeing himself getting screwed financially.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's why he basically wouldn't come back for the Five Doctors.
Yeah.
So they
yeah.
used some old footage of him and Romana too.
Yeah. From Shada.
One of the charming things at that convention was Tom Baker was there too. Actually, David Tennant wasn't at that convention, but Tom Baker was, as were three of the other doctors. But he has come around full circle now. He is so delighted to be back in the fold and to be back working with Big Finish regularly and being the doctor again and being a part of these things.
Yeah, we had time to get over the issues.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The people that were involved aren't involved now.
When you hit 80, you know, you better just roll with it. Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting that you mentioned the Big Finish audio stuff because for many, many years, the only doctor was Paul McGann.
Yes.
Because he was doing those dramas and those plays.
The current Doctor, but the other Doctors, there were three others that were also simultaneously making them.
And yeah, but Paul, I think the nice thing about Paul McGann was that's where we got his arc as a Doctor, was only
right.
a
yeah.
And they did a fabulous job. I mean, I think that was one of the, as a big Finnish fan, I think that was that giddy moment of that nice little webisode,
yeah.
you know, where he does the shout out to all his companions, and you're like, oh my gosh, those last 3 years of my life are, you know, now canon.
I was going to ask, in the theaters, they played it here, right?
Yes. yes.
Yeah. Did they have that webisode before the rest of the broadcast?
No.
That was on. Yeah, you had to watch it online. Yeah. And of course, now it's on the DVD.
Well, that's odd, though, because ours did.
Hmm.
I think it just depends on the area. I saw it down in Colorado Springs. And they didn't have that as part of it.
Oh, well, I was in Arkansas, so.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, so sorry. I'm so sorry.
There is a stretch of I-40 through Arkansas that mm-hmm. is under construction. It goes from one border to the other.
Uh-huh. Essentially. Kind of like Wyoming.
Yes.
But should we talk rumor mill at this point?
Or like not? What?
Well, like I've been hearing odd things about possibly Susan coming back.
Yes.
How do you hear these things? I'm curious. Is it because you work for a PBS station, or is it just through the internet?
I have because I'm in PBS. I also have contacts at BBC. So
you're here. That's your pathway.
That's my pipeline for hearing crap.
But that's slipped out on a couple Doctor Who fan sites.
Yeah. Well, it's
multiple times this season.
And Modern Doctor Who has mentioned that he had a granddaughter.
Yeah,
a couple of times. So it would be interesting if they brought that.
Yeah, she's still alive.
If the daughter's ever going to come back.
We do have the Doctor's daughter as well, yes.
Oh, they have so many.
She was cool.
Oh, she was so cool. What a horrible... We've never heard anything else. There's been nothing with that character.
You know what? And you're talking about Jenny?
Yes.
When you asked what's the Doctor Who episode you would show to get to a new person, my answer is one that a lot of fandom doesn't like, because for some reason... much of fandom doesn't like the Doctor's daughter. I think that's a perfect introductory episode, and I've used it because, number one, it's interesting. It's got a neat little mystery. But you hear about the Doctor's past.
Too.
You hear an explanation of the Time War and Last of the Time Lords, and are you a soldier or are you not a soldier? And then you get the whole climax at the end with the gun where he has... And he's holding the gun there, so Matt Smith wasn't the first one. He has every reason, you know, psychologically, to use a gun. And he doesn't. He says, you know, remember me as the man who never would. And to me, that is Doctor Who. And it's a great encapsulation of Doctor Who. And you don't have to, you know, it tells you some of the backstory in there. So that's the one I use when I introduce somebody new.
And the name of that one is?
That's called The Doctor's Daughter.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a fair amount of characters out there that need to be brought back in some way. I would do a new series called Children of Time and have Riversong grab Jenny... Luke, Sarah's adopted daughter, or adopted son, and her adopted daughter, and a couple others, and give them an off-brand show. Because you have a bunch of characters that I think would be interesting to see how they interact.
Well, I actually liked Sarah Jane... Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. I was going to say the Sarah Jane.
I actually liked Sarah Jane so much that I would have accepted that if because she had spent so much time with the Doctor and spent so much time near the heart of the TARDIS, that when, sadly... she was dying, they regenerated her, and there was another season. And she can't explain it. She's like, this is wrong. How the hell did this happen? And the new actress is trying to, the new Sarah Jane is trying to figure out what the hell just happened. This shouldn't have happened.
I
so love the Sarah Jane character, I would have bought that.
I get what you're saying.
You would have had an amazing actress to pull that off, but that was just such a cool character.
I can't imagine them ever doing that out of respect for Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that was her
role. Oh, no, you would have needed her permission to do that. You would need her cooperation to pull that off.
And unfortunately, you know, her death was so sudden.
Yeah.
And I just can't imagine.
Because that was a great... I mean, I wanted another 8 seasons of that show.
Sure.
That was a fun show.
When I watched Sarah Jane Chronicles, I was, like, really getting into it. And then there was no more episodes on Sci-Fi Channel, and I went, what? And then they told us on the website that she had passed away.
Yeah, halfway through the season.
And I finally typed in, so what's going to happen to Luke?
Jenny?
And Skye, because he has two, remember. And they never got around to his third, adopted a third child named Walker.
Yeah.
Oh.
No. I could just
slavery.
See
never seen
that part where they say, hey, this is my new roommate, and it's like space.
have to tell K-9, don't shoot the roommate.
We're still talking Doctor Who.
Yeah, yeah.
I can actually see that happen. Going, that's the roommate, don't shoot!
Good, I'm glad you liked it.
Okay, now you have to answer all the questions everyone else has got to answer.
Who's your favorite doctor?
Tennant.
Favorite companion?
Donna.
What? Least favorite doctor?
I don't have one.
Favorite scene with a sonic screwdriver? Favorite scene with a sonic screwdriver? Yeah, we had some fun ones.
Banana.
I like the one from Deep Breath. That was the funniest one. Is that thing voice activated?
It is, isn't it?
I have a question. What did everybody think about the TARDIS in a human body?
Oh, that was fantastic.
That was hilarious. Yeah.
That was cool.
I loved it because it was a TARDIS's perspective. I didn't want to be in storage anymore, and I needed someone to go and take me around the universe.
Yeah,
that's not how it
works. Right. You have your opinion. You think you stole me, I stole you.
Yeah, I'm proud to say, Gaiman stole some of my ideas on that one. I had always thought that if the Doctor and the TARDIS talked, the Doctor would reveal that the TARDIS was taking him where he was needed. So he knew what was going on.
Yeah.
And so I love that line because that was one that I always pictured happening.
Always took you where you needed to go. And suddenly the last 50 years makes sense.
Yes.
That was great.
I must preface or suffix my answers with, I only started watching after Christopher Eccleston, so I know nothing before.
Cool. That's you have okay. A world ahead of you.
Yes.
Oh, and we had a rather tenuous debate, which everyone said I was wrong. Should you upgrade the special effects, the awful special effects in the older ones to make it more amenable to modern viewers? I said if you do it right, no problem. I mean, if you do it horribly, don't bother. But if you do it right, no problem.
Down.
And everybody was like, don't you dare touch the holy writ.
I have no opinion because I really don't know. That's a good one. I have to think about that one.
I always break it. Do you bring it up to the standards of the day when the episode was made, or do you bring it up to the standards of today?
Where we watched the old classic Doctor Who's.
Personally, I find it ironic that here we are talking about a time travel show, and you're talking about should we fuck with the past?
That's my answer is yes!
Now, I'm sorry, did you say that there were Doctor Who meetups where you're watching the old episodes?
Yeah, we meet up at my house.
Okay.
We're still on Pertinella. I was just saying, we'll probably be 80 and we'll finally get through the Seventh Doctor at the weight.
Oh, I should probably...
very funny.
I should probably drop this on the table, but remember, this is nothing that's set in stone. But PBS is working quietly behind the scenes to get the rights to show them all again.
Oh, nice!
So, that would be
including missing episodes?
No, actually, this is the question
you heard it here first.
All the ones that they recently found, yeah.
You find all the old Doctor Who episodes. Let's say you find the magic box in the attic. The fanatic recorded everything. You have it. It's there. And you transfer it to digital so it's nice and safe. So the question I ask you is this. Do you, in an act of generosity, just release it on the web so everyone can see it? Do you sell it for as much money as you possibly can, and it doesn't matter how long it takes to show? Or do you arrange that it'll all be out in a year, but you'll still make a hefty profit? Which level of... Where do you stand on the moral ambiguity here?
Are we talking from the standpoint of where the BBC...
Yeah, you're the person who found it. It's now in your position. Do you give it all away? Do you sell it for as much as you can, no matter how long it takes to get
out there?
You're
the person who found it. You're not the person who owns the copyright or the licensing rights on it, so you have to give it to the BBC.
Ah, I'm sorry. I lost it, BBC. What a shame.
Yeah.
In other words, you could go about it. If they want it back, they're going to have to pay.
And that's been happening with a lot of the Australian copies.
Right. So you find them all. You've got every single Doctor Who episode, basically one and two. It's there. You've got it. You've got everything.
Basically, it becomes an impasse. They own the rights, but you own the actual physical film. So you end up coming up with...
You could go to the BBC and say, if we don't make a deal, it's going to accidentally get released for free.
Yeah.
So now, by the way, you might want to release it for free. Maybe you have the opinion that this belongs to the world. You don't have any right to it. Well, a perfectly acceptable opinion.
Sued by the BBC.
No, you don't have to be the one who releases it.
Stop.
They're going to arrange for it to be released.
So hold on. Let's say you come across the copyrighted work of an author. And none of this stuff has been released in years, and everybody's been looking for it. There's no in-print versions of it. Are you going to do the same thing to that author?
It depends. Is the person who benefits, let's say this author has a granddaughter who desperately needs surgery. She needs the money. No, I'm not going to be a jerk. If it's some vast corporation that's owned by Bechtel Corporation and they manage to acquire the rights, screw them.
But you have to understand that with the BBC, so for example, Terry Nation's family still owns the rights to the Daleks.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to go to them and ask permission and then, if I'm not mistaken, pay them when they want to put the Daleks
in. And that same kind of thing they have with K-9. That's why they
K-9
Sardine Adventures, because every time they use them, they had to get approved.
And because the family who owned the rights to K-9, they've been trying for 30 years to get a K-9 kid show off the ground.
And they did that in Australia. They had, was it two seasons?
But I go back. You have this box of material.
I think there's too many people that would be hurt that are not the BBC. So I would give it to the BBC.
So you give it to
the BBC. So that the Terry Nations of the world and the Neil Gaimans of the world, anybody who's written the stories get credit.
Would you give it to the BBC knowing that they would probably bury it and release it slowly over a very slow period of time to maximize the profit from it? Because you could show the original one. Hey, we're going to show one episode, 8 o'clock on Tuesday, and next year we're going to show the other episode, 8 o'clock at end of the year. So if you want people to actually get it before, like, a lot of us die.
Here's what I would do. I would give it to the BBC, but I would tell the world, look, here's all these episodes. I'm giving them to the BBC. Because I want to make sure all the writers and everybody who worked on it gets compensated as these are released, because that's what happens with these DVDs. Here you go. And then everybody in this room and all the Whovian fans are going to put pressure on the BBC to get all that shit out as fast as possible, because they want to see it.
Yeah. And the BBC would not care.
That's really a great...
Yes.
BBC would not care. BBC will release
it
whenever they want to release it.
That's a great hypothetical. Here's one that's for real. You're a group of fans who love Doctor Who, and there are dozens of episodes out there that have disappeared entirely. But we still have the scripts. And
remake them?
Remake them. And that's,
actually, with modern computer graphics?
That is...
I'm part
of a small group who's trying to forge a little pathway for fans to be...
So we can finally see the Romans again?
To sidestep... the copyright issues, so that we can create fan films of those episodes.
Isn't it, as long as you don't profit from it, you're fine?
Right. That's
kind of how the Star Trek people get away with what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's got to be non-for-profit.
Actually, we have the Romans.
Oh, we have the Romans.
If we can create a...
Was it Marco
like
Polo?
I say, if we can
create... Yeah, Marco Polo is the first missing story.
Got it.
But if we're successful and we can create a legal precedent where you can do this...
You know, we probably didn't exist.
It's hoped that other fans will start grabbing some of those episodes and start making their own. That way we've at least somehow saved those stories.
Well,
if not.
Have you seen some of the older stuff that they've done where there are sections of stories that have survived? And
yeah,
what they've
and
done
they
is
do
they've
animation
created some crude animations.
Yeah, the Invasion, Tenth Planet.
The Harkness transformation into Trouton.
But now I'm actually researching Macra, because the group that I'm a part of wants to redo the Macra town. And mostly because it all takes place in rather small sets and outdoors.
Right.
So it would be very easy for us to do that.
By the way,
when
I'm curious. What's your name?
Angel.
Are you too embarrassed that you're both wearing the exact same clothes? I'm just doing
Oh my god,
isn't it horrible?
The same outfit.
They're just staring daggers at each
other. You told me I was an original.
There you go.
We are in a little
Joanna Lumley, that's who I was trying to hear.
I'm from an alternate universe where the fourth doctor is female.
There you go.
Now, when the technology gets good enough, that you can basically create on databases using effects a Tom Baker episode. Without Tom Baker, you just have the blue screen character, but it'll look like, it'll sound like, it'll be like Tom Baker. You have all those episodes that you could create when Tom Baker technically didn't have a companion. So you could actually create 1,000 Tom Baker episodes if you want. You can create a whole bunch of Dave Tennant episodes if you want, because we haven't seen every adventure he's been on. At some point, when you can really say that it'll look like you're looking at a Tom Baker or Tennant episode, does that become the canon? In other words, you have multiple Doctor Who episodes. You know, oh, it's 8 o'clock Tennant time. It's 8 o'clock Thursday. Must be Dr. Tom Baker time. So on. Will that make it into the canon? Is that something they should do? Is that something that is inevitable?
Probably not.
No.
But it's a fun exercise that helps keep part of the history alive. And that's what we're working toward. And the approach that we're taking is we're going to recast find people who can do good versions of Jamie and Zoe and Troughton, put them in front of a green screen, drop in as many backgrounds from miniatures and other things to do it as cheaply as possible.
There's a movie called Saving Lincoln you might want to watch.
Yeah.
The guy at my school actually made the movie. I don't know if you've seen the Lincoln with Spielberg. Amazing, beautiful, wonderful, fantastic. Can't show it to my students. Too advanced. Unless you have a master's degree in Civil War history, you spend half the movie going, what? Where? What?
I prefer Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
However, I've shown my students Saving Lincoln because the film technique they did is they took basically photographs from the Civil War, mm-hmm. used them as their backdrop sets, and it works amazingly well. I mean, it doesn't look like they're actually back in the Civil War, but you get where you're at. You get what's going on.
Yeah.
You're in Lincoln's office because that's the background, and that's the set. And it worked very well.
Our thought was, you know, how can we best recreate these production values without going broke or having to take out a mortgage on the house?
Well, I'm actually surprised that they've never attempted animation.
They have.
Just do straight animated versions of all of those lost episodes.
Oh, well,
real animation. I mean, they could have gotten...
I want them to redo these Star Trek animated shows.
Those are
awful ones from the 70s.
Oh, those are great.
Yes,
I like them I like them for the campy aspect of it. But you've got all the sounds, you got the voices. You should redo it with an animation.
No, those are perfect the way they are. Especially, I love the episode where Spock travels back to his childhood and saves himself. And the monster sounds like Godzilla. It's the actual Godzilla cry.
Those read so much better than they view.
Stories are great,
I would love to see them read down to the modern. You don't have to change. You've got the dialogue. Just reanimate it so it doesn't.
I love them the way they are. Absolutely.
I'm all for camp. I like terrible things. But that's no reason not to do something.
And yet,
you're
the one who's advocating, redoing all the effects.
I would continue to watch the old shows as well. I love the old shows; it's part of my memory. But
you, sir, are legion. You have multiple sides here.
But you ask about canon, about doing new stories with and would they be canon? It's being done on audio and has for years with Big Finish and the original cast members. So, and fans argue: are they canon? Are they not canon? But then you get something like Night of the Doctor, the McGann minisode, where all of a sudden he's referencing all the characters that were created on the audios, and they.
Well, and it's not only that; they also there was a debate for years: was the Fox movie canon?
Now we
know. Well, they consider it,
right? and they kind of settled that, and they said, yes, it is. It was canon. That is how Sylvester McCoy's Doctor died, and Paul McCann took over.
And they've used images now from it in the modern series.
They have, yeah. They did show his picture.
I think it's tragic he only got one thing.
Yeah.
I think McGann would have been a very solid Doctor. They should have at least gotten a season with him.
But you can tell in all the stuff that he's been associated with afterwards, promotional things and that, the man's heart is just not into the show. It's not what he wants to be doing. So.
But he's done a lot
of
the big...
Are you talking about McGann or Eccleston?
Eccleston is the one who's done.
McGann.
No, he's done so much.
Oh, he's done tons of
things. He did the audio version, which they actually flash animated of Shada.
Yeah, I remember that.
Hmm.
That was online. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he'll be here for Denver Comic Con coming up this next year.
Yes, I know. Oh. I'm excited because...
Him and Colin Baker.
Well, I already got Colin Baker. So, those will be four in a row.
Here's the weird
thing. Oh, that's the question I wanted to ask.
First time I saw the first movie was back when I was 16.
What do you mean you say the first movie?
The McGann movie.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And the first time I saw it, my dad and I sat down, and we absolutely hated it. And then when I started seeing the ones with Eccleston and all that, I went back and actually watched it again, and I said, oh, now I get it.
I didn't actually see it until after, because I wasn't a big Doctor Who fan back when it was on with Colin Baker.
Mm-hmm.
But I watched it once in a while, and so I didn't know all that stuff about him regenerating and all that, because all they showed here was Tom Baker. So...
Yes, we know that.
That was awesome. Quite frankly, won't shut up about it.
Do you think John Pertwee's son will ever get a chance to be the Doctor?
No, because he's Alfred.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
You know that? He's Alfred, Batman.
on Dr.
Go back to sleep.
Oh.
Go back to sleep.
And he's brilliant.
Okay.
No, I loved him in Brother Catfell. He was great in that series, and I heard that he actually went for Dr. Google and didn't make it. But I thought he would actually make a pretty solid doctor.
Do you like yours?
It's possible.
So
I wasn't sorry
in our Cribbins
phones
and porch.
In our Cribbins?
Donna's grandfather?
I got it.
Wasn't, Wolf. But what, wasn't that what Tom Baker said?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, another. Oh, he went. He tried to do it.
He was more than we looked at that time.
Was he the opportunity cost doctor?
I don't know exactly why he didn't get, but I remember reading something about how at that point.
I can't explain Tom Baker was.
Yeah, we got Tom Baker, but he was up for the role at that time. He was one of the ones they were looking at, apparently.
He made a great grandfather.
Yeah,
he did.
Yeah.
Well, he's been good throughout the series, even as Ian the cop in the Christian movie.
Oh, that was
that's the master.
Yeah, but that was him tapping on the glass.
Yeah, he will knock three times, but that the master was doing that first. He went dun 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 dun.
I forgot mine today.
That was a great effect.
Yes,
they were good. Yes, the modern show has great, beautiful, huge effects, but they do wonderful things with just a. They also have subtlety, and I love that. The doors open, you know, just a little. I mean, they don't
really
go big all
the time.
They
have some gorgeous moments all throughout the series. I think
My
favorite is where in the Christmas invasion, where the aliens' voices start slowly changing back into.
Hey, does this mean the Master gets to come back now?
Possibly.
Since Gallifrey's coming back.
But
they've talked about it.
Yeah. But the voices change over to English, and they all suddenly realize, wait a minute, turn around and doors open.
Oh, yeah.
Did you miss me?
Oh, speaking of, who played the first Master before the actor?
Roger Delgado?
No. He was also Brother Catfell. Famous British actor.
Oh, yeah.
He was in Ironclad. I mean, he was in...
Yeah, now he's in Intruders, right?
Yeah,
another guy you're talking about.
I would have liked to see him as a Master for an episode or two. Just because, first of all, he looked and acted and screamed the old Doctor. And haven't turned into an evil just for an episode or two. But I love the guy who he became.
Derek Jacobi.
But the guy who became the Master was a phenomenal Master, too. So I can't complain. They started out good, and then they transitioned to this guy that was just... John Saxon was amazing.
And actually,
just I just
really
love
brilliant.
John.
My favorite role of his was...
He had so much fun being a bad guy.
Yeah,
you
the
go
Master,
back
he, was
it.
He was sort of bland, and John Soon just made him what he should have been.
I've always been an Anthony.
He enjoyed being a bad guy as much as the Doctor enjoys being a good guy.
Yeah.
You
and
were asking
you
about
mean.
Favorite villains, or favorite, well, monsters, villains. For me, the Master has always been... one of my all-time favorites. I don't like everything they've done with him under John Sim. I like some of John Sim's qualities. I don't like some of the places they took the character.
Yeah.
I'd love to see him come back. I'd love to see John Sim come back. But
again, rumor mill.
But I also, my other favorite one is
Sutekh.
Okay,
that's
kind of hard.
Pyramids of Horror.
Oh, that's my favorite episode.
Yeah, isn't he in
there? There's also rumors about bringing back the Rainy.
I
got to go
Ronnie
and the Angels.
I was going to say that.
There's always rumors about bringing back the Ronnie.
Please bring back the Ronnie. I have to wait.
Really?
Like,
I'll believe that one.
Just have her and River Song have a cat fight.
I would introduce my mom. My mom is like almost anti sci-fi. I would introduce my mom to that. I would tell her, go in, watch this video, turn all the lights out at night, full moon.
Now, you know what I did? You know the scene when, whatever you don't blink, and the boyfriend's looking at the creature, and he blinks, and the creature's right there? I went until that moment, and my brother's this at the screen, and then I went to that moment to go, ah! I swear his butt left the chair for like 3 solid seconds. It hovered.
My little sister was watching Blink. And she's like, I don't know if I'm watching a Doctor Who episode or a horror movie.
Yes.
Well, that's
and
always
I just started laughing because my sister is a horror movie crazy person. And she's watching this movie and going, I am not going to get scared. I'm not holy. And she calls me and goes, Mariah, yeah. When you say you're watching Doctor Who, are you watching Blink right now? Yeah. Yeah, this is a great episode. I don't think I'll be sleeping for a while.
But the new one that they did with Capaldi, the listen one, that's gonna turn into like Blink, where they when they say, "Do you want to watch? when you pick an episode to turn them into a Whovian.
Well, that's one of the ones that that caused a lot of controversy.
Yeah.
Because parents freaked out.
Well, it's funny because it also takes back to the fact when you are a little kid, that is the thing that you do. You look under your bed
sure.
for the monster.
Well, but that in line of Clark is one of the best ever. You know, you are just a scared boy. I mean, for her to come in and tell the doctor that to his face, you just don't want to be scared of the dark. It's like, that is perfect.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's about being a little kid being scared of the dark, and little kid is scared.
You were talking about young kids. I think you can listen again now. Mm-hmm. I think you were talking about young kids and like a 7-year-old or something. I have my son is about to turn 11 in a month or so. And
congratulations and good luck.
Yeah, I know the years ahead are scary, but right now he's a good Doctor Who fan, and Listen was one of his all-time favorite episodes. It's considered particularly scary, but don't worry, I won't give anything away. But as a kid at that age, he absolutely was blown away by that episode. He loves it. Yeah.
And the thing, I won't give anything away, but the thing at the end,
it had a good.
I was like, oh my god!
It's one that did a good job with coming back on itself.
Yeah. I was like, oh my god, she's actually.
Yeah, it's one of the least adventurous ones, but it's such a great character one.
Yeah.
Even when he was a kid, I was like, wow.
I think that's why one of the reasons I wouldn't be all that interested in seeing updated special effects or something, because I think Doctor Who has always been most about the story and about the characters.
Yeah.
Starting with the character of the Doctor and this amazing premise that he can go anywhere in space and time and do the right thing, and you can have horror 1 week and comedy the next week and mystery the next week and history the next week.
I think
part of it is the audience in this show, at least in the past, has played a bigger role in suspending disbelief.
Mm-hmm.
Because we love the story, because we love the characters, we are willing to go along with them and not to see the wobbly sets and not to see the poor special effects.
Which is why.
We use more of ourselves to create this experience than I think we do with some of the glitzier, fancier, newer shows.
Which is why I think Doctor Who has survived 50 years plus, while, you know, another show like Space 1999, which had huge budgets but didn't really put that much into the writing or the characters, died off after 2 years.
Well,
that's the
I consider Space 1999 that'd be one season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I love that first season.
It's like theater, like you said. It's like theater, where you go, and as an audience, you just accept that you are going to suspend disbelief.
Right.
And as long as the show doesn't go completely off the boards and to where you can't suspend disbelief, when you can't do that, then that becomes a problem.
Well, that was true with the original Star Trek series as well. It was campy sets. It was backgrounds that you could tell were just murals behind the actors.
And the issues were so intense and important.
But I'm willing to go where no one has gone before because the story is worth it.
And the first season of Star Trek ever was written by actual science fiction authors.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were people there who understood what the hell they were trying to do, you know, week to week. That's why you had stories by Spinrad and some of the others.
Ellison.
Ellison.
You now owe him $2 because you said his name.
I do have an interesting question. I'd like to ask this one amongst Whovians. If you could choose, would you want to be a doctor? Like, you're regenerated as a new form of the doctor, or would you prefer to be a companion?
Companion.
Companion.
Doctor, I'd own the TARDIS.
You know, it's interesting. I would have always said a companion. I mean, and that was what I would have thought growing up. But I think I grew up to be the doctor in some ways.
So you're going to go with doctor?
Yeah.
I mean, you get to hang with chicks.
Mostly redheads, in fact.
Okay, I'm going to be cheesy, but I'm going doctor because regenerating and having a new body would be kind of nice.
Is everyone...
I do like what my sister once said. She actually quoted me on this because she was describing Doctor Who to my mom, of all people. And she said it's a superhero with no powers, but he has the ability to, one, regenerate, but also think things through before anyone else will. And make a, and also claim he can't be perfect. And that's what my sister said, that's what she was looking for a hero for my nephew.
I'm gonna guess doctor?
Doctor. Yeah. Because
shocked. I went out on a limb there.
I mean you're already wearing the outfit, so
yeah. I'm halfway there. Yeah.
Dress for the job you want.
Exactly. Fake it till you make it, right?
I would like to be a companion, but frankly, I think I make an awful one, so I probably have to go with doctor.
Yeah, I picked doctor too.
Yeah, that's
you get your own
Sonic
screwdriver
into much trouble.
Why wouldn't you pick the doctor?
How would you not?
Yeah. I know.
Well,
and if you get tired of one body, just go, oh, I could get a new one.
Well, and who wouldn't want a robot dog?
I know. So.
Yes.
Well, yeah, but all his companions are the ones that ended up with K9.
So, did anybody else make a cardboard K9 when you were
out? Actually, my boys have been working on one at
that
other house.
Like, places that are accessible to you.
No, just get to one of those Dalek farms.
Maybe.
I do have a cardboard Dalek at home. We have a Dalek costume. Every time we ever bring it out to a costume contest, we win first place with it.
Yeah. I've got one in my
This companion opportunities. I would have loved, loved if the Dalek episode with Eccleston, if that Dalek became his companion. That would have been hilarious because he would have been, we'll just exterminate. No, we can't exterminate them. Why not? I mean, it just would have been hilarious if that guy got, the Dalek has no place else to go. He can't just unleash him in the universe, so he just by de facto becomes a companion. And now he's got a companion who's a Dalek, and every time he comes out of the TARDIS, everyone runs screaming, you know? No, no, he's on my side.
Like the one with Matt and Handles.
Yeah,
Handles was
fun.
I love that. I
personally,
wish
I you guys want those? I'd prefer Kylie Minogue, but that's just me.
I would like the one I want to come back is
so
Canton Everett Delaware III from.
Oh yeah, I love that one.
Impossible Astronaut Day of the Noon.
Yeah,
I want Canton.
Yeah, he's another one out there they could easily put back in. But there's quite a few, like I said.
Oh yes, the gay FBI agent would have made a phenomenal companion.
Yeah, he was cool.
Or. And just putting it out there, because you can play with it as a timeline show, I think Nixon would have had three or four episodes. Just to have Richard Milhouse Nixon,
that would have added a whole new layer of surrealism.
Yes.
That episode...
what did you do? I stole it. Why? Because I'm a crook. I mean, come on, you could have had so many options there.
That episode...
Richard, did
with
you steal
the
Tharlog Martin thing?
That episode with the FBI agent... That dude is Crowley on Supernatural now, by the way.
Well, he's been like every a genre show he has been on.
Yes, and the older version of him was his dad.
That's cool.
Who has also been on every genre show. I mean, you can go back to Babylon 5 and find him on episodes of Babylon 5. He's been that same character actor. So to have them play each other, play the same character at different times in their life, I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Now, to take a little tangent there, because you mentioned Babylon 5 and remakes, that is one, yes, I would love to see them update the special effects.
I was going to say that, yeah.
Honestly, and here's where it's going to sound, I know I'm the master of championing special effects redo. I think the special effects in Babylon 5 were sufficient. They don't rip you out of the show. They don't rip you out of the setting.
They were totally sufficient for the time.
For the time.
If you ever watch it now on a large screen TV. It
doesn't hold up.
Well, the problem is not the TV. The problem is you have such high definition. That stuff, for instance, I watch old Mission Impossibles, like from the 60s, and you actually see where they marked out the Ford on the car, which you couldn't see with the old televisions.
Right.
You could see to avoid copyright problems. And you can have, because the clarity of the televisions we have nowadays, and when they digitally remaster something, they completely...
There's a scene in Star Trek...
I mean, we're going to have to adjust our television and say, I need 1995-level presentation. Otherwise, yes.
Well, the Deep Space Nine episode that I mentioned, where they merged the Tribbles episode, right, with the crew, they took the old episode of Star Trek and they digitally remastered it. And when they did, and they had it nice and bright and very digital, they noticed that as Leonard Nimoy is walking down the corridor in a scene with Shatner, and they're in character... There are coffee stains on his uniform that never came through before on standard definition on the old broadcast. So they then they're sitting there and now they're having to airbrush and get rid of all these coffee stains on his uniform throughout the entire episode that they didn't even know there.
Yeah.
There's a scene on the bridge that, you know, the bridge is wild. It can come apart in different ways. But they're hanging around Spock's station, and you can see the wood screws going into the side where it's blacked out, you know, but you normally ignore that, you know. And for some reason, they didn't do anything to digitally take them out.
Did anybody see...
They might not have noticed till it aired.
Yeah, that could be, too.
We're kind of going off of Doctor Who. Did anybody see the movies that they made of Babylon 5, like the follow-up movies?
Yeah.
Most of them, I just...
My fiance downloaded all of them and made me watch them. I sat there going, I can't believe you made me spend 6 hours watching this with you.
Well, what's interesting is they lost all the ship designs and everything that they had digitally that they used to create all the stuff. They lost it all. So when he went back to make those movies...
So they worked for the IRS.
He went, holy crap, I can't believe we lost that stuff. A fan had built models and everything, 3D models, and had was doing like fan films and stuff. They had to go to him or her, I'm not sure, to get those models.
It's not copyrighted. All my stuff's not copyrighted. Ha ha.
They had to go and get that stuff to make be able to make those movies.
Well, that's what they did with Dalek. When the Dalek came back, that was a fan made Dalek because they didn't have any. Doctor Who hadn't been done for a while. No one's making Dalek. Okay, we need a Dalek. Well, it'll be easier to use a fan-made one than to actually go and
build one.
I've been geeking about the fact that the new opening sequence to Capaldi's Doctor Who, don't worry about it,
nothing. No, this isn't.
Yeah.
Was done by a fan, and then they grabbed it and did some mods, but it's still the fan's design.
Yeah, I like the opening sequence. I hate the music.
Yeah, that's the general consensus.
Matter
of taste. I like them both. I think the new music is awesome.
I really wish I brought my cell phone because I have a lot of the old.
Well, I feel like every year the music has gotten worse and worse and worse. They did really great with Russell T. Davies, but since Moffat has taken over, he's changed it every year. He's made it, unfortunately, he's kind of gone backwards, and it's like he's doing retro. I feel like they basically said...
He went back to the 70s.
Yeah, he went into his closet, and he came out and said, here's my Casio keyboard. Can you do the Doctor Who theme on this for me? And that's what they're doing. It sounds terrible to me.
What I've always wished someone would do is to contact one of these guys who do the crystal ringing goblets and things like that. Originally, that theme was written for a guy like that to be playing it. But the BBC balked at how much it was going to cost. The guy wanted way too much money, so they went, you know, the way they did. Mm-hmm. But I've always wanted to see somebody do a YouTube video of one of those guys playing the Doctor Who theme so we could know what it actually meant to be sounding like.
Is John Williams still alive?
Yeah.
I would love for him to take a crack at the Doctor Who thing. Because I gotta admit, every time I think, well, how the hell is he gonna do that? How the hell is he gonna do that? And yet he comes up with does amazing things, like the Harry Potter thing he did is just it's perfectly Harry Potter. The Star Wars thing is perfectly Star Wars. He is a musical science fictional adapted to the heart of the story genius. It's just, that's the only way to describe it. I'd love to see how he would adapt the Doctor Who to an orchestral.
Actually, you can, because Roy Budd, another composer who did a lot of stuff, I think he wrote Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger and a few other movies. He actually did a symphonic version of it, and it's available on a 3-disc set called Final Frontier. If you ever come across it, you can maybe even find it on YouTube. I don't know.
I like the version that the Blue Man Group did.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was on the pipes.
Doctor Who? Is that on YouTube?
I think it is, yes.
That was kick-ass. They really should be
using
it.
I think they were having way too much fun with it at the time, because they were like, oh, let's do this. Go with it.
Let me see, I was in Little Rock for one of the touring shows, and they did that, and again, the whole frickin' place went nuts when I realized what
they
were playing.
They did an orchestral Doctor Who theme song for the Night of the Pops.
Yeah.
You could only find it on YouTube.
The Proms?
The reason they put it on YouTube is because the U.S. audience could not see it. They wanted the U.S. audience to see it, but BBC could not get permission to send it to the U.S. Because they didn't think there were enough fans that would watch it.
Yeah.
Especially when David Tennant's the one hosting.
Have you seen the Late Night with Craig Ferguson?
No.
Yes.
Yeah. So he loves Doctor Who.
That cold opening.
And he had this whole thing.
I can't wait for him to come back because I saw an episode of him with Peter Capaldi when he was promoting his Malcolm Tucker movie. And he had the same outfit. He's like, you look like a magician.
I love how he had this whole thing, and he sits there and he's looking at the camera. He's like, well, we had this whole thing planned for Doctor Who. We can't get permission from the BBC to do the song, so we're not going to do it.
Oh, yeah.
He was angry. He was so angry.
But then he released it.
But then he released it anyway.
Yeah, it would be so cool
to see for Peter Capaldi to come back now, since they're friends now, that he's a doctor. That would be just...
Yeah.
So fun to see.
All right, well, I have to get going, guys. So
yeah,
I want to thank everybody for coming in. Thanks, Ian. Thanks, Etten.
Definitely.
Goodbye, everybody on the internet.
There you go. Part 2 of my Doctor Who fan forum panel at Mile High Con 46. Thanks to everybody for participating. Thanks to all the folks who came and sat and chatted. And we had just a wonderful conversation. It was so much fun. I hope that you have enjoyed listening to this. We'll be back next week with a regular episode. Until then... go watch Doctor Who. Thank you for listening to the Hugo Award-winning SF Signal podcast. Your host is Patrick Hester, an author, a blogger, and a functional nerd. His website is www.atfmb.com, which stands for All Things From My Brain. ATFMB is also his Twitter handle and where you can find him on Facebook. Our podcast is available for download every week at sfsignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the links to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com or search SF Signal in iTunes. If you enjoyed this podcast, please tell your friends and have them tell their friends and so on and so on. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all of your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal regulars offer up new content every day, from weekly mind melds featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SF&F field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, fiction deals, movie reviews, videos, links and roundup posts, and more. Click the RSS button in the sidebar of your browser to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Angry robot.
Magic Wooey.
Wah, wah.
Thinking and crap.
And scene.